You and I back together again, Tuesday style, the 29th of April, 2025, right here, Connecticut Today. I opened the show on this Tuesday talking about recent statements by U.S. Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy on the record and current appeal of the Democratic Party. And you know what? On this, Chris Murphy was right. He was spot on. Yankee Institute columnist Megan Portfolio offered her latest detailed analysis of state budget and employee raise proposals. And Italian-American One Voice Coalition President Andre Dimino, back on the show, talked about possible Trump White House action regarding Columbus Day across the U.S.
So, you know, from the moment or the minutes that we are little kids on up into and through adulthood and, you know, maybe into our adulthood, one thing we try and do, right, if we have any sort of smarts on us, is learn from our mistakes, right? I was always taught that. I'm sure you were taught that as well. Hey, our coaches taught us properly. Maybe our little league coaches or peewee football or high school coaches, whatever. Our teachers taught us that. Our moms, our dads, our pastors, our rabbis, our imams. We always hear this. Learn from your mistakes. Okay, I get it. And still, having just turned 64 at this stage of my life, I'm like, yeah, how did I kind of screwed that up on the show the other day. Or I screwed that up with my personal life. Let's see next time, because there's going to be a next time. We all know that. Let's make sure that we learn from our mistakes. And if you learn from your mistakes, you can then say, okay, if I get in this situation again, how do I get my opinion over? How do I get my ideas over? How do I somehow change the trajectory of my life or of a decision I make and do things better? Well, everybody has been clutching pearls and beating their breasts the past few days because of the 100th day marking the first 100 days of the Trump campaign. And a guy that's been out there a lot, that we talk about a lot, is Chris Murphy. Now, Chris Murphy is our junior U.S. Senate member, and he's still, if you take it at an aggregate look, he's 51 years old, so he is now rumored to be in the next wave of Senate leadership. You know, they're trying to nudge the Chuck Schumers out, the Dick Durbins out, the older folks. I say, well, you know, it's time, and I like that. I don't care what party it is. Get out. When you get to your late 60s, early 70s, get out. It's been enough. Go home. Enjoy your kids or your grandkids. So Chris Murphy has been out doing these, you know, these speaking tours, if you will, and that's fine. Look, I give him credit. Him and Maxwell Frost and some younger Democratic leaders say, hey, we're going to go into these Republican areas because the Republicans won't do it, because a lot of people are upset with Trump. And in some ways, I don't blame him. So Chris Murphy is out there. And there was a big Associated Press story that came out a couple of days ago that's been posted on a couple of sites here in Connecticut. And I find it interesting because in reading this story, and you can find the story of the Connecticut Mirror, the big headline is Chris Murphy takes his emergency message on the road. And it's an Associated Press story that was posted early yesterday. You can find it on the Connecticut Mirror. You can find it in the Capitol Report from our pal, our buddy Tom Dunchick. Now, it's interesting because it's a long story. I'm not going to read too much of it here. But the key lines in this story are literally the last lines in the story. And they are the most powerful lines in the story. And this story is several paragraphs. It's on the longish side. But in fact, let me scroll down here and look at it again, because I think it may be just one line or two. Let me see. Scroll up. No. It's one sentence in this entire story uttered by Chris Murphy, and he gets it. It's the one sentence in this entire story that supersedes any of the crying, the whining, the pearl clutching, the brow or breast beating that we're hearing about Trump's 100 days. Now, first 100 days. Here's the question. Is his party smart enough? Because they can cry and bitch and moan all they want about Trump, and Lord knows there's been reason to, but are Democrats smart enough to realize what they have to do? Stay close and do a little business here. Come back, and I will read you that sentence, because that provides our question of the day, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. All right, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Big, big, big long story here, a big scroll-down story about Chris Murphy and Maxwell Frost and a bunch of Democrats that are going around the country because it's been 100 days since Donald Trump has resumed office. Trump 2.0 after his third run. And look, I think he's pulled a good number of screw-ups here. Now, some of the stuff he's done I like. Other stuff I sit there and faceplant. But here's the bottom line. Chris Murphy says in this article, and it's a long story, and you can scroll down and read the whole stinking thing. Here's the line that matters. Quote from Chris Murphy. Our party has made mistakes. And if we don't learn from those mistakes, Murphy said, we're cooked. Yes, Senator. You're right. Your party is cooked. So I ask you, especially if you despise Trump, if you're a proud Connecticut Democrat, and we'll have audio coming up later on of the show, Democrats holding a news conference today in Hartford, Attorney General Tong, Governor Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, and they're all a-quiver, all crazy about Trump. Well, listen, let me ask you folks. And I'll ask you folks this. Why did more than half of the country vote for this guy after they knew what he was about, and yet, knowing everything about Trump that they knew, they elected him a first time, almost elected him a second time, and elected him a third time? So is it about Trump, or is it about how distasteful the great, grand Democratic Party has become? I'm serious. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Yes, I know his poll numbers are cratering already, and it's been 100 days, and people are upset. But the guy, how many millions of people voted for this guy three times, electing him twice because they found the other side and its candidates so distasteful? Explain that to me. And in these lines, Chris Murphy is right. Our party has made mistakes, and if we don't learn from those mistakes, we're cooked. Yes, Senator, with all due respect, I agree with you 100%. I do. So that's why I posted this on our Facebook page today, facebook.com/voiceofct. Chris Murphy says his party has made mistakes and may be cooked if they don't learn from them. Is he right? Might the modern day Democratic Party, not here in Connecticut, it's a blue state, it will be for the foreseeable future. I get that. That's how people vote. But, you know, I really have to sit here and laugh, honestly. I'm chuckling at everybody who is pushing back on Trump. And that's fine. You can do that. Give us your alternative. Because you sure screwed up in the run up to the election a few months ago, didn't you? And I'm sorry if I'm a little jaded here at a dictator. I have friends of mine, Mussolini, Hitler. Oh, stop it. Some of the most ridiculous stuff. Until he gives us more evidence that we're going down a dictatorial path, which we're not. The guy's almost 79 years old. He's only going to be around for a few more years. You know it, and we know it. The guy's not immortal. Come on. Calm down. And if he goes off the rails any further, he can be removed rather easily if his own party, if the Republican Party says, yeah, that's enough, this is too far. It can and will happen. But no one in almost any branch of the media wants to tackle the real issue in the room, and it's not going away. Why did he win again? And this time, how come? I know you're all nuts. Oh, look at the poll numbers, 100 days. He wore the wrong color suit to the Pope's funeral. Oh my God, he got a corporate sponsor for the Easter egg roll. You know, all right, fine. It's a simple question. If the guy is so egregious, if he is Satan, Beelzebub, Stalin, Marx, Hitler, Mussolini, all rolled in to one nice, tidy, clean, zipped-up package, how did he win? How did he win? This guy was not a third-party candidate. This is not George Wallace. This is not John Anderson. This is not Eugene Debs. This is not some third, fourth, or fifth-line guy here. And yet you have the pants-on-fire media running around here like they don't understand this. Then the other night at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, you had I forgot who this guy is. I got to pull that story up for you later. You had some self-aggrandizing jerk get up there and said, oh, we, meaning the media. This guy gets up there the other night. He's like, well, you know, we dropped the ball on the cognitive decline of Joe Biden. Yeah, you sure did. While at least 2/3 of America saw it, and you people said nothing because you weren't being objective. You don't think that was a big help to Trump on a silver platter? Oh my God, come on. So yes, Chris Murphy is right. He's 100% right here. Our party has made mistakes, and if we don't learn from those mistakes, we're cooked. However, you'll hear the sound bites coming up in the show later on to listen to our leaders in Hartford, Governor Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Bisewitz, Attorney General Tong. They have their heads firmly buried in the sand, and they show no intentions of pulling up and getting fresh air anytime soon. Anne Marie in Stratford. Anne Marie, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi. Yes, you know, if I'm available, I'll talk to you. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm good, Anne Marie. How are you? What's up?
Okay. I'm going to throw my ideas out there for your question, you know, my answer.
Okay.
One thing is, I think he tends to tap into people's fears and prejudice. In other words, it's the let's say the immigrants taking all our jobs and this and that. You know, he knows how to tap into what people are feeling. Democrats don't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats tend to say everything's good, everything's doing fine, but they don't discuss more real life issues.
Okay.
They don't get down with people and say, look, I know you're worried about the price of eggs, and this is why we had a chicken flu. There's a lot of we're going to try to work on it. You know what I'm saying? Just talk to a common person the way a common person speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say something that's going to anger a number of your listeners, but I'll say it anyway. Because I'm not afraid. That's just like you're not. We both have cuyums, as they say.
Okay.
I say what the biggest mistake the Democrats made was not bringing him to trial and getting through it sooner. And even if he was found not guilty, fine, it would have been over. But if he was found guilty, we wouldn't have been in the position we are now dealing with, you know, that he's here.
Yeah, but he was found guilty on those 34 felonies.
Not of the insurrection, not of treason. They didn't even touch that.
Yeah.
I'm saying what they should have done on a federal level was go after whatever they felt they could and had evidence. They moved too slow. And if you move too slow, you're dead. That's what I know.
Okay.
They bury you.
All right, Anne-Marie, thank you.
That's my opinion.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Anne-Marie. You know, and there was a thought at the time as to why they didn't do it. And to Anne-Marie's point, I did have a lot of legal experts on here who said, you know, that's a state of mind case that you almost could never prove. But to Anne-Marie's point, maybe just the visual would have helped.
Yeah, that time of the week, kind of like medicine. You may not like to hear stuff that our next guest says, but you need to know. We talk about Megan Portfolio. She of the Hartford Portfolio blog and the Yankee Institute. She sits there. She reads through these voluminous bills. She finds the nasty parts. She watches CTN and all does it because it's her job. Megan, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm good. I'm actually good. Let's start with this. And you've been alluding to this for weeks. Are state employees getting a raise or not? Or is there a little like, hey, it's an election year two-step that's happening in the next year or so? What's going on with that?
Oh, no, this isn't a two-step. This is like a flat-out government in cahoots with state employee unions.
Okay.
So AFSCME Council 4, they're one of the big unions in the state that cover the like the state and municipal employees.
Mm-hmm.
They
yeah.
had a big conference this weekend out
yeah.
in Groton, and it was they had a great time, lots of drinking, lots of dancing, and then they had a special guest,
yeah.
Governor Lamont.
Okay.
And this is what Governor Lamont said, and this is actually a very important quote because you don't hear this very often. But he spoke, and probably about 200 people were in the audience, and this was his quote. Every year that I've been here, you've gotten a raise, and every year I'm here, you're going to get a raise.
Hmm.
Like, I have never heard such a statement about anything like of importance, like, every year that I'm here, special ed will be fully funded, or every year that I'm here,
mm-hmm.
you know, we'll make, you know, the business climate better and lower taxes. Oh, no, his only focus is to make sure they get their raises.
You never hear, hey, I'll make sure that we fund the state police to the levels we should be funding the state police.
No,
you don't get
that. Don't ever hear. Or, you know, I know the police are upset about that police accountability bill.
Yeah.
I don't ever hear, like, every year I'm here, I'm going to make the job easier for our law enforcement. You never hear this, but it was actually very shocking and very sad because he's in charge of negotiating with these unions.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be coming with a plan that not only works for the employees, but also for the taxpayers who are paying the bill. And if you're negotiating, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience with negotiating other than, you know, negotiating my own salary.
Yeah.
You don't go in like telling them what they're going to get. Like, how is that a negotiation?
Well, and you're one of the people watching this whole budget process, Megan, who said that, okay, they may not give them in the first year of the contract, but it may happen in the second year, but be applied retroactively. Did I read that right?
Yeah. So also last week, we had a couple big meetings, one in the appropriations where we've gotten like the legislation's first like run at the governor's
mm-hmm.
budget.
Yeah.
And they bumped up a bunch of stuff from even what the governor has asked for. And there was something suspiciously missing from the first fiscal year of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And that was raises for the state employees. So it doesn't mean they're not getting a raise. It means they're kicking the can down the road of when that's going to be funded. So you know, the lawmakers who just got into the office, so this is their first term or first year of their term, and then
yeah.
there's next year. So that budget covers those two fiscal years, and then they're up for re-election again. But when they come back again to do the next biennial budget,
sure.
You know, there's going to have to be about $130, $150 million in there just to cover the retroactive part of it. Because there's no one saying that they're not going to get a raise. It's just, oh, we're not done negotiating right now, which
mm-hmm.
is, and I find it hard to believe. How are you not done negotiating? You flat out told, you know, the union that you're negotiating with that they're getting raises. So there's definitely things that are going on as typical with these union negotiations, they're all done behind closed doors. We pay the bill, but we don't even, we can't even get copies of even basic, like they, when they go into negotiations with unions, they usually set these ground rules up before they even start, like things they can talk about and then how the negotiations are going to go. There really isn't like that much revealing information in that, but I can't even FOIA that. Like I have no access to any information going on right now with the negotiations.
Megan Portfolio is the guest from the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute. Okay, let's move into full head-splitting mode now. The head-cracking mode. The guardrails. The spending cap. What's under that?
Who needs guardrails or a spending cap? I mean, we only had a ballot initiative. I forgot what year it was now.
Yeah,
80% of Connecticut voters wanted a spending cap. Pretty much most of the state wants this, and they don't care. They don't care.
So where is this right now? Because I'm constantly seeing, well, that may be under the cap. Oh, we can move that from under the cap. Like, try to tell us right now at 5:23 where we are here.
Okay, so the what they're proposing right now, obviously this is going to change. There's, you know, typical, they'll end up putting rats in the bill and other stuff. But today, we're looking at a $55.7 billion two-year budget.
Okay.
That is $215 million over the spending cap.
All right, okay.
But that's okay, because then the next day, I think it was on a Wednesday, there was the Finance Committee. And we're going to make up for that because we're going to increase taxes for the wealthy. So they want to do a capital gains tax and, you know, just really stick it to the rich people because they're not paying enough in taxes. Well, we're not. None of us are paying enough in taxes, apparently, because we can't fund this government.
So are those tax bills actually going to go somewhere? Because you know how the governor is with raising taxes on a lot of people that he knows in Lower Fairfield County.
Yeah, it was interesting. There was actually a couple Democrats that voted against against that tax. I think they call them the Blue Dogs.
Yes.
I don't actually know who's in this Blue Dog group. I'd love to meet them all, but yeah, not everyone's happy about this. This is more of a Martin Looney progressive.
Yeah.
The unions and the progressive activists want this because you know they just want to fund everything, and the way we do that is just keep taxing rich people.
No. Okay. Anything that you're looking for, Megan Portfolio, in the next 2 or 3 days that we should be watching for, committee votes, stuff moving in and out of committee, debates coming up, anything pique your interest or just slogging through it?
This is that weird time where I'm like, I'm on an edge. I'm like, because, you know, as time runs out, that's when the shadiness kicks in.
Oh, my God.
But this is like, I think next week is going to be my last week of like normal work week.
Okay.
You know, they're doing basic bills right now,
you
know, nominations. There was a big gun bill this week.
Mm-hmm.
I expect, what are they calling abortion? Reproductive rights.
Yeah.
We're going to see some of that coming up soon. And then it's just, you know, there's the whole energy thing. That, you know, they're trying to lower our rates. And the only thing I've really seen so far pushed out of the Energy Committee was a bill that would actually increase our public benefits charges.
Great.
We want to add heads to the sitting council. So I haven't really seen anything that's going to lower our electric bills. The only thing I've really seen is this would actually bump up our public benefits charge. But they promise us, the government promises us, it'll cost us just a little bit more but it'll pay off in the long run.
That's all.
You know how
I mean,
we can just always trust what government says.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you and I see the same numbers here. We're number two behind Hawaii in average monthly electric bills, but we're only $10 a month behind. So, hey, we're slacking here. We should be number one in most expensive bills, shouldn't we?
Oh, my goodness. We should be number one in the galaxy at this point.
Thanks, Megan.
The country.
Megan Portfolio, Hartford Portfolio, the Yankee Institute. Megan, thanks. Appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Megan Portfolio there. She gets paid to watch and read and dissect all this stuff. Among the myriad of things that are machine gunning out of the White House here almost faster than you can pay attention from President Trump was something he said about Columbus Day earlier this week. They got a lot of people going, oh, we're into this again. And again, it's an issue that I've been following here, that many Italian Americans in Fairfield County, the Bridgeport area, New Haven County, all throughout Connecticut have been talking about. And we welcome back our friend Andre Domino, who's head of the Italian American One Voice Coalition, major group speaking out about Italian American issues in the U.S. Andre, it's Paul here again. Good to have you back, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you, Paul, especially with this great announcement.
Yeah, so what did Mr. Trump actually say? Because I'm seeing kind of, Andre, kind of fractured reporting on this. So explain this.
Well, he put out a post on his Truth Social where he was very clear. He said Columbus Day is back, although it really didn't leave because it's always been a federal holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have 11 states and dozens of cities and school districts that eliminated it. But he said unequivocally that Columbus Day is back, that he supports it. He supports it because it's for Italian Americans and Americans. And he said that he's going to make sure that it doesn't go away. So we're very, very pleased. In fact, it was an outstanding thing for us to see on Sunday.
So would you say, Andre, objectively, that there will be more support from the White House for Italian Americans and Columbus Day coming out from this administration as in the previous administration under Mr. Biden or not?
Well, I believe that, you know, as Trump has been, President Trump has been from the beginning, you know, he made a statement back in 2020 where he supported Columbus Day, and now he's coming through with his second term with a very definitive statement about it. And I think that we're going to see a change here. You know, we've been, our organization, Italian American One Voice, you know, we've been battling this in school districts and cities across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fortunate. Of course, it's a federal holiday, as I said.
Sure.
But do you know, Paul, that there were both Senate and House resolutions that were put up to eliminate the federal holiday, which, of course, we were opposing that. And that's why we just continued the fight to preserve Columbus Day. And now with this statement from President Trump, if any one of those bills comes through, we think he's going to veto it.
And, you know, Andre, it's interesting knowing you were coming on today. I was kind of boning up on this again. We've talked for years in the past that it's interesting mm-hmm. where you see people saying, well, you know, it doesn't mean, Andre, that we don't want to honor Italians. There's just other people to do it. Well, okay. And then I can never really find, now you tell me if I'm wrong on this, I'm saying, well, okay, how are you actually honoring Italian Americans and the contributions of such if you get rid of Columbus Day? And some of these municipalities, they talk a good game, Andre, but I don't really see it. Maybe you do. I don't.
No, I don't. And of course, you know, unfortunately, Italian Americans are still subjected to the stereotyping, which is still out there. And, you know, this is the one day that we have. And why should people tell us who we should honor? You know, Columbus, the reason Columbus is there, Columbus Day is there specifically, was because of the single largest day lynching that occurred in 1891.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting, Andre, I tell people that and they look at me like I landed from Mars. But please explain this. Go ahead.
Sure, absolutely. In New Orleans in 1891, in March of 1891, there was a mob that went after 11 innocent Italians because of the death of a captain there, and they tried to blame it on the Italians. And mm-hmm. they were innocent. They lynched them. Many were beat up. And then there were other lynchings in other places around the country. It was so bad back then, Paul, that the country of Italy almost declared war against the United States. And that's why President Harrison, to calm things down, declared the 400th anniversary of Columbus's arrival in the New World, October 12th of 1892, mm-hmm. as the first Columbus Day, whereby the country should celebrate it and act as an atonement and an apology. And that was really the welcoming of immigrants back, Italian immigrants, into this country. So it's important for our ancestors and generations that have passed.
Hey, Andre Domino, by the way, the guest, the head of the Italian-American One Voice Coalition. Check him out online, iaovc.org. So you talked about legal proceedings, Andre, and I know in the last couple, three times we've talked, you mentioned this. Are there any current suits pending or coming lawsuits or legal actions that have wound up in some sort of decision since we last talked, maybe over the past year or so?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, Paul, the suit that we instituted, the federal suit because of the removal of the Columbus statue in West Orange, New Jersey, believe it or not, is still pending here 3 years later.
Mm.
You know, they tried to get us out of there by saying we don't have standing.
Yeah.
Well, we won that battle. We got standing. They tried to get it, dismissed. They couldn't get it dismissed. So, you know, even if we've got to go to the Supreme Court, we've got to fight this because Italian Americans are a recognized group under the 14th Amendment, and you shouldn't replace one group's holiday for another. And that's really why we're fighting about that statue. And there's been other suits around the country with varying levels of success. And that's why it's important that we got this definitive statement from the president about this, because Columbus Day should be respected. Listen, not only for Italian Americans, Paul, but really for all Americans. Mm-hmm. He changed the world. He united the continents. You know, Leif Erikson may have come here 1,000 years ago, whatever they say, but nevertheless, it was after Columbus where the world was really united.
And you know, Andre, I discuss this with people all the time. People say, well, he did this and that. All right, so let's assume, for argument's sake here, just logically as human beings, well, if Columbus didn't come here, or didn't come, let's say you revise history, as some people want to do, back then in 1492, well, it's like, honestly, Andre, like nobody would have come here. We right. Like nothing, like we would have been hundreds of years later, and another explorer, maybe from Spain or Italy, would have never come here. It's ridiculous. It flies in the face of logic.
You're 100% correct, Paul. Listen, Columbus was the great navigator. He did that great voyage across the world where no one else did it before. And he was the one, you know, he tried to spread Christianity and so forth with his voyage. And although he thought he was going to the Indies, to India, he ended up in this part of the world. But nevertheless, you're right. If he didn't do it, someone else is going to do it. What do they think, that the world's going to stay separated until today? Of course, that's right.
All right, folks, go to the website. Keep tabs on the Italian-American One Voice Coalition, IAOVC.org. Andre Domino. Andre, always good to chat with you. We'll chat again around Columbus Day. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Andre Domino. Check it out, the Italian-American One Voice Coalition.